Hello and welcome to a very special hour of the show as I travel to the other side of the world to join Simple Minds live at the Sydney Opera House in Australia.
A month after landing in Australia, thinking we were unknown, we left with our first ever gold disc.
You know, I've managed the band for almost 15 years now, and it amazed me that they haven't played here a zillion times, because so many bands have, and it seems to be a bit of a rite of passage at a certain level. It's another venue, but it just happens to be one of the most iconic venues in the world.
When they first came to Australia in 81, they were instant sensations. Because I knew they'd wipe the floor with everybody, because they were unbelievable.
I feel proud to be Scottish and to be in that audience and join them, you know, when they're still going, how many years later, 40 years, 50 years later, and you look around, there's thousands of people there loving them.
It clicked immediately for us in this country. People just took to us instantly, and we took to the country, and it was the first place with major success.
When Jim Kerr and Charlie Burchill formed Simple Minds, they only had one goal, and that was to make music that took them around the world. For the last 45 years, that's exactly what they've done. I attended their first ever gig at Satellite City in Glasgow in 1978, and have been lucky to see the band play at home, across Europe, in America, and even as far away as Brazil. So when I discovered they had sold out two gigs at the iconic Sydney Opera House, I just had to be there. For the next hour, I go behind the scenes with Jim and Charlie on their Global World Tour 2024, talking to members of their close-knit on-the-road team, to the Australian A&R man who signed them to Virgin Records, and I also catch up with a Scots pop star who gives us an insight into the Aussie music scene. And, as you can hear, we have some exclusive live music from the shows. Over the years, Simple Minds have built a loyal fan base in Australia. It was the first territory in the world that the band enjoyed some real chart success with the single Love Song. And Jim Kerr and Charlie Burchill both have vivid memories of the moment they first set foot on Australian soil.
More than 40 years ago, 42 years ago, the very first night we landed in Sydney, having travelled all the way from Glasgow, we get in about 6 o'clock.
And it was a bit Planes, Trains and Automobiles, wasn't it?
It was... in those days, cheap tickets, you had to go round. It was called a sort of one-way ticket. You had to sort of circumnavigate the world. And we went something like, if I got this right, Glasgow, London, London, Rome, Rome, Bombay, Bombay, Perth, Perth, Sydney. So, I mean, it took probably 2 days. And when we arrived, the feast, we saw the Opera House, we saw Sydney Harbour Bridge. We actually took the ferry across a place called Manly, where Echo and the Bunnymen was playing that night. So we went straight to a gig. But from the minute we set our eyes on the Opera House, there's been this desire to play there. And until now, it's eluded us, because it's very hard to get availabilities. We've played every other venue in Sydney, from the big arenas to the pubs and clubs that we started with. And finally, we got the chance to play in the Opera House. Not one gig, but 2 gigs. And as I was saying, can't really think of a better or more prestigious way to start a world tour.
Charlie, what do you remember about your first visit to Australia back in 1981? What kind of big deal was it for you?
Well, Billy, when we first came, considering it's the other side of the world, we were really, really young, it was like just this other world of colour, you know. And then suddenly, you know, the weather, and it was the first place with major success.
And you were getting a lot of radio play because they had a kind of network of almost like college radio, didn't they? How did that work?
Every city had a fantastic radio station, and there was like Triple J in Sydney, Triple K in Melbourne, and they would play essentially what was almost like our album collection. It wasn't like they were playing, you know, just classic hits or top 40. They were playing obscure album tracks. It was really fantastic. So there was a really healthy scene in from the radio stations, you know, in terms of cross-section of music, you know. So that also worked in our favour, you know.
And you had a bit of a hit there, didn't you? Because Love Song took off, and that gave you your first bit of real sort of chart success, didn't it?
That's right. Well, Love Song, you know, surprisingly us, because we didn't even think twice. But because here they had quite a lot of clubs and big clubs, and somebody just latched on it and played it because it was, you know, it was a dance track. Suddenly, before we knew it, we had a kind of an underground hit.
The global tour, which includes hometown gigs at the Ovo Hydro in Glasgow on March the 29th and 30th, will see Simple Minds spend most of 2024 on the road. The huge string of dates has been coordinated by Ian Grenfell, who's been the manager of the band for the last 15 years. As you can imagine, it's a monumental task, so does playing concerts more than 10,500 miles from the UK throw up any unforeseen problems?
No, it doesn't really matter where. You know, we operate on a global level, so the idea of rehearsing in New Zealand and starting a tour in New Zealand and Australia in January, you know, it's pretty obvious the weather's good, people are happy, the days are longer, so it makes sense. It's a little bit more difficult and a bit more expensive getting everybody out here, but, you know, you've seen yourself, you've got a happy band, happy crew, and they will go into a UK spring and a European late spring, and it's the right way around. We started one tour, I remember, in Riga in Latvia, and everybody was pissed off for about 5 weeks afterwards because it was so cold. In fact, Jim's coconut milk didn't unfreeze for 5 weeks. I remember him saying that when it was kept on the tour bus, so far happier environment.
What was going through your mind when you drove up in the minibus, you know, on your way here and you saw this incredible place? You know, you thought, we're playing here tonight, not just one show, but two shows. It must be a real kind of box ticked, is it?
What was going through my mind was, it's another gig, and I hope the gig goes well. I hope everybody's happy. There wasn't a second I was thinking, oh, what an amazing, iconic venue. I'm just thinking, has everyone got what they need to do good gig? And this is a bit tricky because we're doing two shows in one night. That doesn't happen too often. It's happened before. It happened at Copenhagen for different reasons because the venue was shutting down the night after. So all I'm thinking about is the quality of the gig. There's a few guests here and it's like, is it going to be okay? And then midnight tonight, when it's all gone well, I might wander back. I might have a glass of wine by the harbour, and then I can think, what an amazing place.
Backstage at Sydney Opera House, Simple Minds were reacquainted with an old friend, Ross Stapleton, a music industry A&R man who is now back in his native Australia. In 1980, he'd seen the band live and knew they were trying to get out of their deal with Arista Records after releasing three great albums which somehow failed to make a major impact on the charts. Ross had real faith their best days were still ahead. He just had to persuade Virgin boss Richard Branson that he should sign them.
Having heard their music via their albums, and then I went and saw them play live at the Lyceum, supporting the Only Ones, and I couldn't believe how good they were. And I'd been running around trying to see all these good bands, and I wasn't seeing anyone who I rated, and that included Killing Joke, Joy Division, all these up-and-comers who were going to take on the world. And then when I saw Simple Minds, it was like suddenly, there's a great band. There are great bands here. And I think ever since, and for my entire rest of my life, they are almost the gold standard as far as live bands go.
How did you set the wheels in motion to try and get Richard Branson and Simon Draper to sign them? What did you physically do?
In my own mind, after, you know, and I'm involved in the press at that stage, and magazine and people like that, what Human League bands I'm looking after, always at the back of my mind was that, God, if I could have a band like Simple Minds here, that'd be perfect. It'd be great for Virgin, it'd be great for the band, because we could give them, I think, stuff that they're not getting at Arista. And also Jim, when he came to see magazine, I went out of my way to make friends with Jim and let him know how much I rated Simple Minds, so that there were thoughts and seeds planted to say, well, should the impossible come to happen, I'm in.
And there was one Friday, I think I'm correct in saying, when you were sitting in your office and Simon Draper bust his way through the door and said, tell me why Richard Branson and I should give up our...
Waste a weekend.
And come to Glasgow to see this band. What was your reaction? What did you say? How did you sell Simple Minds to them?
Well, I'd been at him and was going backwards and forwards, and at one stage I thought he had made an offer, but it was a low-ball offer. I then found out that they were going to go to EMI, and I had one more plea with Simon to say, we're making a mistake. We really need to think about this again. Straight away, I knew all the key indicators you needed to say this is why you should go and waste your weekend in Glasgow, which was things like they've got a ready-made fan base, they've already proven themselves with their albums, they're the best live band in the country bar none, James Kerr's great bloke. They're a cult favourite with a lot of critics who I know I could easily persuade to get on the bandwagon. It was just made for them.
Although you had great faith in Simple Minds, who could have predicted that they would have a number one single in America, they'd have a number one single in the UK, they'd play at Live Aid in Philadelphia, they'd be pivotal to the Nelson Mandela concerts. You know, this must be something, and all of the things that you've done in your career, this must be the thing that you're most proud of.
Well, certainly, of all the bands I've worked with, and there's quite a few who had pretty phenomenal success, yes, I'm proudest of Simple Minds because they never deviated from what they thought they could be. And in Jim and Charlie, you've got the blueprint of how to be a great band. And you've got the friendship of two schoolyard kids who, from the beginning, formed a bond and had a creative unison of like minds. And I think that even though they figured, oh, how lucky are we to be pop stars when it started to happen, I still think deep in their own minds was, we are good and we're as good as anyone else around here, so why can't we shoot for the stars? I never thought that things like Live Aid, you'd never think that in your wildest dreams, but it would be a natural progression once you became one of the best bands in the world, which I always thought they would be.
Sanctify Yourself live at Sydney Opera House, and before that, A&R man Ross Stapleton, who signed the band to Virgin Records. You're listening to Billy Sloan on BBC Radio Scotland, reliving my trip to Australia with Simple Minds. The band's first visit to Oz in 1981 was almost the musical equivalent of a cultural exchange. They invited Aussie band Icehouse, led by singer Ivor Davies, to support them on a sold-out UK tour. Then Icehouse returned the favour by asking the band to open for them on a string of dates on home soil.
And once we signed to Virgin, Ross was saying, I've got to get you down to Australia. Now, in those days, it was a long way away. It was the unknown. But Ross had put together, it was almost like a kind of, you can imagine, a student exchange. He said, well, this band Icehouse would be great for you to tour with there. Same kind of audience. And likewise, they're looking for the opportunity to tour in the UK. Now, our tour at the time was for Sons and Fascination, but we're kind of getting to Hammersmith, the Odeon, famous Glasgow Apollo, so it was getting big stuff. And Icehouse came over, first of all, and they toured with us in the UK, which meant we got to know them, we became pals, we could show them around. They'd never been in Nottingham, they'd never been in Newcastle, they'd never been in Glasgow. In fact, I've got great memories of his first night in Sucky Hall Street. It lived up to its reputation. But then we, as I was saying, got the chance to come to Australia, and through the sort of patronage of Icehouse, as this band Simple Minds come in and all that. Now, there was an underground network, it turned out. There was an appetite for Simple Minds. People did know this stuff, but we didn't know that. We thought we were going to walk on to the sound of our own feet, as I've said. Far from it. We went on the first night, and I couldn't believe it. People were running from the back of the hall. And this was Icehouse's hometown gig. People were running from the back of the hall. We were playing the American Sweat and Bullet. We started with Transmission, and for an opening band, we got two encores. Now, that happened through the rest of the tour with Icehouse, which was about 10 dates. So much so that, and they can do this in Australia, by the last date, the promoter said, stay another week and I'll organise 10 dates on your own, which were like big ballrooms. So we then did that, sensibly, a month after landing in Australia, thinking we were unknown, we left with our first ever gold disc. And here we are, more than 40 years later, back playing with Icehouse again. We're due to play this weekend, and we've got four or five dates with them, as well as our own dates. So, you know, great sense of nostalgia about that. Just amazing memories.
Ivor, your friendship and relationship with Simple Minds dates back to the early 1980s. How did they come on your radar? How did you find the band? How did your paths cross?
There was an Australian fellow who was working at the time for Virgin in London, and he was a good friend of our manager's, and for a period of time he kept sending me bits of vinyl. So I've got Empires and Dance and Sons of Fascination on original edition vinyl. Wow. So I knew about them kind of before most people in Australia did. But Ray Hearn, our manager at the time, he was pretty kind of tuned in. He's like, these days he manages Eno. So that's the kind of level that he's on. And for a little while, the management company also decided that they'd become promoters. So they brought a number of acts to Australia that we toured with. Elvis Costello's very first album, Magazine, XTC very early on. I think Graham Parker and The Rumour, The Enduring and The Blockheads. So they were right there, you know, at the beginning.
Although Simple Minds and Icehouse were playing the music at opposite sides of the world, you very quickly found that your musical tastes that were common, you know, your record collections were very similar, weren't they?
One of the very first concerts I went to was Tangerine Dream concert with their album Phaedra. But as well as that, Supertramp with the Crisis, What Crisis and the Crime of the Century.
Yeah.
But I then had an endless collection of Yes records, you know, so it was to the end of that prog rock period. But then, of course, in the middle of all that, I had a girlfriend who worked for a record company, and she came with a whole bunch of Tyrannosaurus Rex with Mickey Finn and Mark Boland just playing congas and guitar. you know, I was introduced to Lou Reed, to David Bowie. And it turns out that Jim says that the first album he ever owned was Electric Warrior by T-Rex. And when I started the band, we started as a covers band. I'd never played in an electric band before. I didn't get my first solid body electric guitar until my 21st. It was actually the day of my 21st birthday. So wow. I came to it quite late. And I met by accident a guy who played the bass, and he'd been in covers bands, and we decided to form a covers band. And a huge slab of our set was early Tyrannosaurus Rex, T-Rex, early Ziggy Stardust, Bowie, Lou Reed, probably stuff that's kind of the top of the pile of Jim's record collection.
In 1995, you were involved in a fantastic project called the Berlin Tapes. It was a collaboration with the Sydney Dance Company, where yourself and Ice House were actually on stage playing the music live as they were doing their dance steps. And you interpreted songs by people like Public Image Limited and Roxy Music and David Bowie and the Psychedelic Furs. And of course, famously, Simple Minds, you did a great cover version of Let There Be Love. Now, they say that they regard that as the definitive version of that song. Of all the Simple Minds songs you could have chosen, why that one, Ivor?
Where that project started was I kind of semi-retired. I'd had my first child. And I thought, I need to do an album, but I find songwriting incredibly hard. So I thought, I'm going to do a covers album. It's going to be easy because the song's already written by somebody else. It actually turned out to be incredibly difficult to find a new take on things. But I eventually settled on a weird sort of set of instrumentation. It was almost, I had a picture of Chopin's salon. His piano was there, and then he would have a dinner party and invite a few friends over, and one of them would play the cello and so on and so forth. So I kind of constructed this little acoustic ensemble with the piano at the centre of it. And once I started feeding these favourite songs of mine through that ensemble, it was amazing because I could do a Johnny Rotten song and it actually worked. I kind of invented a new version of a Public Image song.
Disappointed.
But with Simple Minds, I kind of thought there's another version of Let There Be Love. And let's try this little acoustic ensemble of it, because it would be a completely different thing. You know, it's not Simple Minds has got a very grand quality to their sound, generally speaking. And I kind of stripped it down to this weird little ensemble with a cello and whatever. And it's such a beautiful song, you know.
And I'll tell you why, because not only did I think it was great what he'd done and it sounded great, it kind of showed me that it was a better song than I thought. I always felt it was okay. I don't think we really nailed it. But years later, he took it. It's a bit like when we did our own acoustic, because he did a kind of acoustic-y version. It's a bit like when we did our own acoustic album, stripping it down. I realised Glitter and Prize, which, you know, everyone, usually Simple Minds fans like that, and I do too. But played on an acoustic, I said, oh, this is a much better song than I thought. I'm talking about the craft of the song. It's a beautiful version that he did. So not only was it a thrill to hear it, but it encouraged us as well. We thought, actually, we did get that right. We wrote a great song there.
I was lucky enough to see Simple Minds play their debut gig in January of 1978, and back then, even in those early days, you and Charlie had one ambition and one ambition only, and that was to make music that took you around the world. We are now literally 10,500 miles from home. Is an audience, or does it something different happen when you cross over all these timelines and touch down in a country so far away?
You know, an audience is an audience in the sense that they want the same thing. They want to feel you're there that night, giving 100%. They want you to be fresh. They want you to be energised. They want you to be as good as the last time they saw you, in some cases 20 years ago. They want you to live up to their memories. They've invested so much in the night, and I'm not even just talking about financially, which concert tickets now are a fortune, but they've invested emotionally. They've told their pal, you have to see it, it's great, it's going to be great. And then I'm thinking, I hope it's great. So us knowing that's the audience of Berlin wants that, the audience in Sydney wants that, us knowing that, I think it gives us this great motivation every single night. Now, I don't know how many dates we're doing on this tour, I've lost count, but you can bet every single night, minutes before we go on, that it's the only night in the world. I think Simple Minds having that attitude, I don't know if I've never been to any other band, I don't know if they'll have that attitude. I could see it was easy, you think, well, you know, we'll hold something back for New York, or I can tell people before the Sydney gig, you and I went out for dinner, delicious, and on the way back you insulted me by querying the fact that, for those who don't know, we did two gigs in the one night, so we essentially did a mat. The main gig sold out in minutes, and the promoter said, there's no availability previous or the night after. How about doing a matinee? And some idiot, me, of course, thinking I was still 35, not 65. But so we did the two gigs in the one night, but previously you said, so, you know, do you go a bit easy on the first gig, hold something back? What an insult. Simple Minds never, ever hold back, you know, because the audience that's coming to see you, I know you might say, but it makes common sense to hold something back. You're in the fight, you can't hold something back. And actually, it's interesting to see the fight. What are you fighting? You're fighting for your reputation. So somebody coming to that early show, it wasn't as good as I thought, or they were going through the motions, or there's no chance.
I've seen Simple Minds on stage on numerous occasions, and the band have never let me down. They always give 100%. Another Scot who's tasted success in Australia is my old friend Mary Keaney. The Scots singer has lived in Sydney for the last 15 years, so I was keen to find out what first brought her here.
So way back in the day, I was having a lot of hits with a band called The Time Frequency, TTF. You might remember them or you might know it. I was doing Top of the Pops, I got my own deal with Mercury Records, First Avenue Management. Things were great, and then all of a sudden there was a phone call came to Mercury Records, to my management. Mary's record, I imagine, has become a big hit in Australia, we'd like to bring her over. And that was kind of how it happened for me coming to Australia. That was 1997. I got off the plane, I went straight to Channel 9, did the Kerry-Anne Kennelly lunchtime show with a live band, sung I Give It All To You. Of course, they didn't put the bagpipes in there that time, just replaced it with a guitar. But I toured all over Australia, all different clubs, and I just fell in love with the place and met a lot of wonderful people. The music scene was really healthy. The club scene was just mega, you know. I mean, the club scene in Glasgow was good at the time as well. The 90s were pretty awesome. So when I came to Australia, the same thing was happening here. The club scene was really healthy. The DJs were just gorgeous people, and just the dance floors were always packed. As soon as you put on my record, I Imagine, the hands went up in the air, and it was lovely for me to see as well, because I'd never even thought about coming to Australia.
So if you go to a gig here, is there a kind of good gig scene? If you get places like King Tut's and the Barrowland and the SEC and that kind of network of venues.
Yes, we have a lot of great venues here, really iconic venues like we have in Glasgow at the Barrowlands. We've got the equivalent, maybe the Metro and George Street, or we've got the Enmore Theatre, we've got the Factory Theatre. And these are all places I've went to recently. I saw Texas at the Enmore Theatre just a few nights ago. Before that, it was Deacon Blue. And before that, it was De La Mitre. And it just keeps going. And I was saying to you earlier, Billy, that I actually see more Scottish bands in Sydney than I ever did in Glasgow.
Mary Chiani also introduced me to Pete Scott, the owner of Pete's Guitar Store, which supplies instruments and equipment for musicians both local and those visiting Sydney. So he was a perfect guy to give me an insight into the music scene in the city.
It's looking pretty good. It was definitely, obviously, tough during the COVID years, but there's some new venues opening up and a lot of young bands coming through, and yeah, it's looking pretty good.
Just by sheer coincidence, you said that a couple of hours before we arrived at the store today, you had Simple Minds Guitar Tech in. So, you know, do visiting bands drop by here and pick up bits of equipment? Who have you had in over the years?
Foo Fighters came in one day. They were quite interesting. Joe Bonamassa came in. We get a lot of techs coming because near the Enmore Theatre, they come down for bits and pieces that they need. But it's a pretty good cross-section. As well as you've got professional musicians, it's good to get people that are started, and I'm quite interested in helping people getting started. I find that to be the most rewarding part of the business.
And is there a lot of interest in Scottish and British bands?
Yeah, there is, definitely. Bands that you'd be aware of, like sensational Alex Harvey Band, huge influence on me. They're not well known by a certain sector of people, but I love that band, they're fantastic. I got put onto sensational Alex Harvey Band by some older musicians when I was quite young, and yeah, just loved Zal Clementson and his outfit and the whole thing was just amazing. Obviously, yeah, Simple Minds.
How are you? Well, I can tell you how we are. Delighted to be back in Sydney. Delighted to be back in Australia. We've been here about 4 days, and yous are all younger than us, but when you get to our age, nostalgia is omnipresent. I get nostalgic for my breakfast. Ah, so many great memories. I have to tell you, in case you don't know, Australia was the first place that gave us success. It was the first place that gave us a gold dish. But of course, from the first minute we set place in this city, the place we wanted to play was the Opera House. Thanks so much. It means the world to us that everyone came to see us. Talking of nostalgia, this is called Glittering Price.
When the Scots are in town, you've got to show up.
Oh my God, how good were they? I've seen them so many times. I actually think it's like Jim Kerr's personal yoga show. I always come just to watch him do the stretches, but I mean, phenomenal. I think that every time I see them, they get better. Like, I've seen them in other places around Sydney, but my God, to see them here, what an amazing show.
Their first time at the Sydney Opera House. They said when they first came to Australia, Sydney, in 1981, that one day they'd play here, and
here we are
today, and it was absolutely fantastic. Oh, they've definitely matured, but they still sound like the Simple Minds of old.
Yeah, they still very
immersive. Like the sound in the opera house here is magnificent, and it's so immersive, and I just got right into it. It's fantastic.
We love our city. It's spectacular and beautiful, and having them here, there's no better place really.
I love coming here. The acoustics are fantastic. It's such an amazing venue. So to have my favourite band play at one of my favourite venues, I had to go to both shows. And luckily, we scored front row tickets for both.
Well, I didn't score front row. I actually scored right at the back. But I have always utmost determination to see Simple Minds up front. And I got there both times, 6:30 and 9:30.
She ran down the front. She ran down the front and just stood in my seat. We double parked. We double parked.
After conquering Australia, the band kick off the UK leg of their global tour in Leeds next Friday. And they're already putting dates into the diary for 2025. So what drives them to keep playing live? Here's Simple Minds manager, Ian Grenfell.
They love playing live. They almost exist to play live and make records. A proper band, they're proper musicians. You know, they're touring minstrels from thousands of years ago. That's just what they do. They love playing live. They love seeing the world. They've got a job that takes them around the world to amazing places, and they're very happy to do that.
At the end of March, the 29th and the 30th, you come home, you play two shows at the Hydro in Glasgow. That's going to be a real big deal, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is. I mean, you play a gig in Glasgow, why is one better than the other? You know, people can argue about they played that song or this, or I like the production. I'd put it a wee bit more mystical. Some gigs is just magic in the air, and people who go to gigs know what we're talking about here. Some nights there's just an added freeze on in the air, a potency, a magic. The last time we played was quite soon after the COVID restrictions had been lifted, so people were feeling great to get out again. So was that, you know, we all survived, here we are, because remember at the start of that, people won't ever go to gigs again, we won't want to go out, all that stuff. Here we were in the hall, everybody singing together, there was magic in the air. Certainly we have to hope we can recreate that again, and we'll be doing our damnedest.
Let's have a final word from Ivor Davies of Icehouse. He knows Jim Kerr and Charlie Burchill better than most, so musically, what is it that makes Simple Minds so special?
Let's start with the elements that kind of strike me straight off the top. And one of those elements is Charlie's guitar style, because it's unmistakable. And it's very, and you know, when you think of the world of guitarists and how many guitarists and wannabe guitarists there are in the world, and then you can actually cite this one guitarist and say, you will know who this is the instant you hear him. He is just unmistakable. He does nothing that's conventional with a guitar, you know. It's just out of his kind of thinking. And it was that kind of energy and power that was the other thing. And that leaves the whole canvas open for Jim to really just kind of create an abstraction picture for you. And that's one of the things, I mean, I think that characterises his lyric. He's a proper poet, you know. You can see why he has such an affection for Jim Morrison. So he's got a very distinctive style of lyric writing.
And they have just gone on stage, so why don't we go and watch them? Ivor Davies, thank you very much.
It's a pleasure, and I'm looking forward to that.
Two sell-out shows at Sydney Opera House, one of the most iconic venues in the world. When the kind of dust had settled and you'd had a good night's sleep and you woke up the following morning, had it kind of sunk in what you'd achieved?
Well, it did when I spoke to my son, because he said to me, did you play a concert last night? He's back in the, you know, over in Europe. And I said, we played two in the same night. And he said, oh, well. And I said, Sydney Opera House. And there was a silence. And I thought, yeah, we just played Sydney Opera House last day. And wow, tick.
First of all, there's a great sense of relief, because if you say, well, bring it all down to one thing, what's the goal when you play a gig? What is the goal? So, well, you want to get a good account of yourself, or, but no, no, get to the real heart of the matter here. Is to send people home happy. And when you look at the end of the night and people are jumping up and down, and let's think about it, you know, right now in the world it seems there's not a lot of things people can jump up and down about. Even sport, there's always a loser. So that, but entertainment, people go, you know, go to forget their problems, but if they can forget the problems of the day, it's such a great thing. And I always think about that. The planning of these things are a year in advance. You know, the promoters book the hall, there's a whole thing, there's the travelling, equipment, crews and all that. It has to happen. So there's a great sense of relief. But Sydney in that night, there was added emotion, even with all that distance. You blew them away. I always feel proud for the band, but I feel proud for Glasgow as well. Because you're representing where you're from, and you wouldn't want to let it down. You call my name.